Hello and welcome to the Sydney Institute podcast. The Institute is Australia's premier current affairs forum. Every week, contemporary political, social, cultural and economic issues are explored at the Institute through dialogue and discussion. This podcast was recorded recently at a members' forum in the city of Sydney. Thanks for listening, and for more information about the Sydney Institute, please visit www.thesydneyinstitute.com.au. We hope you enjoy this event.
So thanks for coming along tonight. I'll be very brief in my introduction. Thanks to Minter Ellison for the use of this facility, and to Microsoft, who's brought Joe Trippi to Australia and made it possible to have this function tonight. So I'll introduce our speaker very briefly. He's made quite an impact already in the Australian media. He made national headlines with his innovative internet-based campaign for Governor Howard Dean, and he was a senior advisor to Senator John Edwards in the 2008 campaign. He's an election analyst and a commentator for CBS, but also the author of The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, original edition 2004, most recent edition 2008. And he's going to speak for us tonight on that topic. Joe Trippi, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that introduction. I want to thank Microsoft and the Sydney Institute and the others involved with putting this event together for bringing me here. I must say that I've spoken in many places, but never in a place where I was distracted by the view as I was speaking to the audience. Like is this place? It's just beautiful. What a setting. I'd like to start by explaining something I think that's happened, a big change in communications that's brought on all these events that you've witnessed, many people witnessed in the Dean and Obama campaign and other parts of our society. What we're witnessing here is not just a shift in medium. We had a shift from radio to television. That occurred for the first time in America. It occurred in the race between Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy. There was a big debate in which almost every person who listened to those debates on the radio, believed that Richard Nixon had won those debates. Anybody who watched those debates on television were sure that the young, charismatic John F. Kennedy destroyed the sweaty, bearded, forgot to shave Richard Nixon. That was sort of the first struggle between two media. And television won out in that election, and we've seen the power of television ever since. That was just a sort of struggle between the power of two media. That is not what we're seeing today with the internet. This is not just a shift from one to the other. And again, by the way, television, as powerful as it was, didn't wipe out radio. Radio is still all around us, and many people on the radio in the United States, Rush Limbaugh, is still a very powerful force in the United States because of the radio. What we're witnessing is much more like what happened to society before the printing press versus after the printing press. Before the printing press, power was in the hands of those, and knowledge was in the hands of those who could afford to pay scribes, often monks, to handwrite the more powerful books, more important books of the era. The Bible was in the hands of people who could pay scribes to write their own individual copy of it. Suddenly, the printing press happens. And power shifts from the top and the wealthy to everybody. Suddenly, pamphlets can be printed out and put out on the street. People like Thomas Paine can create revolutions and a dialogue and discussion in the United States and around the world. These things start to happen. That's what we're seeing here. This isn't just a shift from television to a new medium called new media or the internet or text messaging. This is a shift also in power. and it's taking it, like it or not, from those at the top and distributing it to more people at the bottom, to average citizens. And so that is the beginning of the story of what you're seeing in the Dean campaign and in the Obama campaign. It was the beginning of a new bottom-up technology that was many-to-many, and that there was no barrier to entry. Any two people in a garage with a PC or a Mac could create something so creative, so energizing, that if it spread to millions of people, as they spread it to their friends, a message that would get other citizens to join a campaign or to join together in common cause for the common good and make a difference. We have not seen anything like this, both the shift in medium and the shift in power, since I believe the printing press. That's what we actually have, a multifaceted many-to-many printing press with no barrier to entry, and any citizen can change can create an act of journalism, can change the course of an election. We saw this recently here with journalism with the bushfires, where several citizens with cell phone cameras were reporting things and moving things into the media that the media hadn't even gotten a camera up there yet, because they can't be everywhere. So this is the kind of thing that's starting to happen. And the Dean campaign was really, to my view, the first place where we were able to, well, I'll put it this way, there are a lot of people in politics who understand the internet. I mean, who don't understand the internet, excuse me. And there's a bunch of people who are technologists and internet folks who don't really understand the day-to-day operation of politics. I happen to be one of these people who grew up every day wondering what was going to have the biggest impact on people and change their lives, technology or politics. And you make the case that the cell phone's done more to change people's lives than any single politician has. So I'm still... to this day, not sure I figured that out. But I had been involved in both worlds enough to be dangerous, I guess, and to start to look at a different way of doing things. Howard Dean's campaign was a campaign in which we had to invent a lot of things that people take for granted today. We created something called Dean TV, in which it was a broadband channel that you could watch on your laptop that was populated by different videos of citizens out there saying, here's my song I made for Howard Dean, or here's my video I made for him on why I thought he should run, or here's a video I caught of him yesterday. We created that channel and had 190,000 people at a time watching it. 3 or 4 years later, there would be this thing called YouTube, which was the exact same thing as Dean TV, and the only difference was we didn't try to sell Dean TV to some VCs to try to get it funded to become what it was. But YouTube had 67 million viewers the day Barack Obama announces his campaign. So in the Dean campaign, we have to create and invent Dean TV. Barack Obama's candidacy, just 3 or 4 short years later, has 67 million people who watch that channel at any time. We created Dean Space and Dean Link, which were our own social networks, because things like Facebook and MySpace didn't exist or were only happening on a few college campuses in the United States. 3 short years later, millions of people are on this thing called Facebook that did not exist in the Howard Dean era. And when I say era, we're talking 36 months earlier. YouTube, Facebook, MySpace, Twitter. Twitter didn't start till towards the end of the Obama campaign. So you have all these tools on the internet that are empowering individuals to make a difference, to cause real change. And let me sort of explain part of what I mean when I say the top's losing power. When you think about it, we're now in a period where if 5 of your friends send you an email after the weekend where they said they just went and saw that new movie that everybody's been talking about, and all five of them tell you that the movie was really horrible. It no longer matters how many millions of dollars the studio's spending on television and posters around the country telling you it's going to be the greatest movie you ever saw. You're not going to that movie. And this is, again, the power of the bottom, the power of your peers, is real power that people are listening to, and they're listening to that and the truth in that and the authenticity in it, instead of listening to those in power, those at the top, those they don't trust anymore, which have some bigger problems in terms of leadership that hopefully will get solved by this when citizens don't just participate by voting, which in your country you don't have to worry about, people vote. But that isn't enough. It's participating in the daily lifeblood of the country and the issues and moving change and moving policy forward. And that's what I think is so engaging about this technology that lets people in parties. And I'm not just talking here, by the way, about politics. Journalism is going to be fundamentally changed by all this. As I said, any citizen can now create an act of journalism, commit an act of journalism without even knowing it sometimes. And you know, like in the United States, Dan Rather is no longer the anchor of CBS Evening News because he covered a story in which they reported that certain documents proved that George Bush was not in his had not performed admirably as a National Guard service. He put documents up on the screen. And there was someone in that television audience who had been an expert on IBM Selectric typewriters and knew that those fonts didn't exist on that typewriter back in that year. And he immediately went on a blog and said, CBS has it wrong. Those are forged documents. And I know they're forged documents. I'm an expert at this. Well, CBS said, no, that's not true. We're CBS. Dan Rather. We know good news reporting when we see it, and we've done that. And what happened was, 10 days later, Dan Rather had to go on the air and say they got it wrong, that all those documents about Bush were false, that they were forgeries, that they'd been reporting for 10 days what was a lie, or at least totally not provable based on the documents they put up. Dan Rather was who made his chops in journalism. He was a 60 Minutes reporter, one of the best investigative reporters the United States has ever probably produced, had to resign and is no longer the anchor. Why? Because of some guy on the internet. And you know, when you think about it, everybody you know is an expert at something. I mean, your plumber is an expert at something, right? He's an expert at plumbing. And so you now have a world in which all these experts are out, all this expertise is there, it can be shared, it can be moved forward, and the guys at the top, the anchor desk at CBS News, doesn't have all, the knowledge is not all sitting there at the anchor desk anymore. And one of the things we learned in the Dean campaign was that the 65 people in national headquarters weren't as smart as the 650,000 brains out there who were working and signed up to work for Howard Dean. So what happens when you have a campaign or a corporation or a journalism entity that understands that it's time to empower citizens and to engage with them, and you see the Obama campaign come along, the campaign Barack Obama, who's dedicated as a community organizer to organize from the bottom up, from day one. That's where this guy comes from. At the same time, the arc of technology and change, the internet, Facebook, YouTube, all these things that didn't exist just 3 years earlier, are coming online with even more power. A bunch of people from the Dean campaign who go to work for Obama and build his web stuff for him. And you have the second bottom-up campaign in history, Barack Obama. It demolishes what people begin the year thinking that Hillary Clinton, there's no way. How can the Clintons be beat? They'll be able to raise more money than anybody, which is true. They had the biggest fundraising network out there, save for maybe George Bush. The old style, raise it the big way. And they're defeated by a campaign that, I mean, you know, nearly impossible to think about it early in the year. Now that he's won, it's hard to remember the days when no one thought he had a chance and that the Clinton campaign was going to walk away with the whole thing. The whole reason he exists, the whole reason he wins the Democratic nomination is because of the resources that millions of Americans gave to him in small numbers, under $100 contributions, over $500 million raised on the internet in low dollars, 13 million Americans who join with him and are out there working and organizing for common purpose. And before I get too far down this line, let me tell you how ridiculous these numbers are. I mean, these are ridiculous numbers. There are 300 million Americans. We're all doing somersaults down the street because 13 million of them decided they were going to join some guy and sign up for him on the internet. It's ridiculous. I mean, that 3 million of, with 300 million Americans, 3 million of them gave him money online. It's a big deal. No, we're just scratching the surface. It's just beginning in the United States. This is just the small first scratches of this thing happening, the first birthings of this new kind of politics in a new bottom-up way that's going to change the way society works, because people don't, the top doesn't have all the information with their scribes writing the important stuff. No, everybody out there can collaborate and join together and create something as magnificent as the Obama campaign. And that's with the small numbers that are doing it. To think that any country is immune or any industry is immune from the changes that are coming because of this communications revolution is, I mean, I wish you luck. It's just not, that will not hold. The change is going to go everywhere, and it's going to move, you'll have industries who will adopt it faster, understand it, and there'll be those who go, no, it's not happening, and CEOs who hope that none of this change happens until they've retired. But it's all coming. And it may take, you know, it may be slower in one country, faster in another. Korea, South Korea was way ahead of the United States in this. They elected their leader using cell phone text messaging technology way before the Dean campaign. I went to school on that campaign. I read everything I could about the campaign in South Korea. It was sort of part of the whole thing that formed the basis of sort of some of the fundamental thinking of the Dean campaign. There are people, yes, now going to school on Obama, but the fact is that this is all changing rapidly. Cell phones are making this. In Nigeria, 1.6 million landlines in the nation of Nigeria, 67 million cell phones in Nigeria. The poorest village, everybody in it will share one cell phone with the rest of the village. When you think about that, suddenly there's a way to talk to people about HIV/AIDS. There's a way to talk to them about mosquito nets, right? It's, you can text message 67 million people. And so all this, and this is actually starting to happen now. It wasn't online before cell technology and text messaging. So I'm not just talking here about politics. I am talking about governance, about the way corporations are going to have to work, about the change that's going to happen with journalism. And I think that democracy itself is going to change because the relationship between the millions of people, not just their voting, but actually being able to become simply engaged with their leaders and motivate those leaders to actually make big change is really important. And I want to talk just for a few more minutes and then open it up to your questions. But one of the things that is happening because of the way this has worked in the United States is Congress is going to become, I think, less and less powerful. Then the presidency, in a weird way, a lot of people who complain about the Bush years complain about an imperial presidency in which the president had too much power, and which sort of ran roughshod over Congress. One of the ironic twists of how this has all come about is Barack Obama is, if you're a member of Congress right now, I say to people, you know, members of Congress are going to find themselves between Barack and a hard place. And the rock will be Barack the president, and then there's millions of Americans. And you're standing, these are the 25 members of Congress that are standing in the way of my health care reform. All of a sudden, millions of Americans, knowing those are the 25 members of Congress, those 25 members of Congress are going to be in a tough place to be. And it's the president with the people squeezing a branch of government, the House and the Senate, enforcing the House and Senate to move along. That is a possibility of where this goes, where a politician gets it and none of the other politicians get it. So there's a penalty for not getting in the swimming pool and at least putting your feet in the water and learning how this stuff works and building a, you know, using it to move your party or your company along. Because if you don't, and only one company in the industry or only one party does, it's going to be the power of tapping that many people is going to demolish the other side. I mean, you look at what's happened in the United States, Dean and Obama, from just those 4 years, we built a huge advantage over the Republican Party. They don't have a network of millions of people who contribute and get involved. George Bush, he didn't need that stuff. He was president, and he had a bunch of millionaires who would send him checks. And it worked for him. And Dean, out of necessity, has to raise small dollars, and Obama does the same thing. And now you've got this really strange situation where the Republican Party has almost no ability to fight, no ability to fund themselves, and the Democratic Party has massive numbers of people, money, etc. So to sort of pull back and not engage, not believe in the people is a big problem. And that's, by the way, what we're talking about. Because what television took out of the game of modern politics was it took people out of the game. Became a bunch of court jesters and consultants who could fool anybody by telling their guy what to say on television. And when they did that, the people got left out. It was all, how can we fool the people? The future is, how can we engage the people? And the party and the campaigns and the industries that decide to do that, engage the people. That's what's important. My final thing before we break for your questions and answers is the following thought. We've all come up, and one of the things that television and sort of this top-down advertising world created was Goliath. Everything in our society was about being the biggest. I mean, you want to be the biggest rental car agency, the biggest network, the biggest part. It was all about being Goliath. The internet and this new medium is creating what Glenn Reynolds, who's a conservative blogger in the United States, called in his book, which is not as good as mine. You have to get mine first. But Glenn Reynolds wrote a book called The Army of Davids, in which his theory was that the internet was creating these armies of Davids on the net swarming to do work in common good and common cause on issues that were interests they had in common. And I read his book and I went, man, in a world where we've got all been taught that the biggest is the best, it's got to be Goliath, and this new medium that's creating armies of Davids, you don't want to be Goliath anymore. I mean, those armies of Davids out, they're going to take Dan Rather down. They're going to take, you know, if you misstep, they're going to swarm you and they're going to do something. So who do you want to be? Well, who you want to be as a party or an industry or company is, you don't want to be Goliath anymore. You want to be the folks handing the slingshots out to the army of Davids, because and pointing at who Goliath is, and saying that's what we got to take out to fix the future. Now, when you think about it that way, the best example might be the music industry, who basically said, "Look, you're going to have to buy the entire album to get the one song that isn't horrible. I mean, like, there's the one song that's okay that you like. You got to buy the whole album." Well, there are a whole bunch of people out there who said, "No, we're not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to buy the whole album just to get the one song I like. I want to just buy the one song." And the recording industry kept saying, "No, no, no. You got to buy the whole thing." They're Goliath. The Army of Davids got formed out there, and then there was another company that said, "Well, we're going to give those guys, we're going to give that army slingshots. We're going to give them iPods and iTunes." And Microsoft went along and they started doing the same thing, and all these companies start being the slingshot companies. The slingshot companies are doing really, really good in that exchange. The people are doing really well in that. The army is doing great. Got 99 cent music. Goliath is not doing too well. Lost a lot of business. So this is I think, just sort of my way of sort of passing on that things are radically changing, that we're going to bottom up handing out tools to people. And that's what the Obama campaign did. It provided people with tools and said, and basically empowered those people, millions of them, and then pointed the way where the change had to go, and people rallied to that cause. That is going to start taking place, again, not just in politics, but in journalism and in the way companies do business. And I don't believe any industry or any government or any democracy is going to remain unchanged because of this force. Hopefully, non-democracies will be, you know, be changed because people have this power to come together and actually demand change in their countries as well. But I think we're at a very early stage of something very, very powerful. And I'm happy to be here with you today and have a discussion about where that might lead us all. So thank you all for being here today.
Many thanks. As I said, thanks to Mr. Ellison for this facility. Thanks to Microsoft for bringing our speaker out, and to Simon Edwards and the team at Microsoft. There's some copies of Janet Grundy's got some copies of The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, the 2008 edition. I'm sure Joe Trippi would be happy to sign. So Janet's down there. And so we come to question discussion, finished no later than 7. Just a quick question. We're aware of the impact of the Howard Dean campaign. Why do you think it was that the focus of the Dean campaign ended up in the Obama campaign after Edwards left? And why was this sort of concept not embraced by the Clintons, who looked like the front runners and then were run over as the campaign went on in the primaries?
What happened in the campaign was the Clintons were real victims of their success in the 1990s. They had won in 1992, won in 1996, and they'd done it by dominating the old media. I mean, by raising more money. They had done it a certain way, and that success impeded their ability to see the new way. Why change? We won two presidencies this way, and so they were very late to change. Obama, because of necessity, had to do it the same way Dean did it. The hierarchy of the big contributors in the Democratic Party were not giving to Obama early on. That happened, but it was after he started to really move. So it was really these young and internet savvy people who had sort of been primed in the Dean campaign who helped start the Obama process. And what those people were looking for was change. And there were only two candidates out there talking about change from the very beginning, John Edwards and Barack Obama. Hillary Clinton at the time was stressing that she had 35 years of experience in just colossal mistake. I mean, regardless of whether you won the old way or not, to not see that the American people wanted change, hungry for it in a big way, was her second big mistake. One, doing it the old way, but then running as a experienced candidate in a change year. And then why John Edwards and Barack Obama, how did Obama come out of that? It's really our strategy on the Edwards campaign was simple. We had to beat both of them in Iowa. We had to come out and win immediately and have the two giants that the press was all focused on, you know, deal with the fact that we beat the two giants, and then maybe people would hear what we were saying. And what happened was Obama spent $35 million in Iowa because he had all these people given to him on the net. At this time, I was sort of cursing myself for helping start the Dean campaign, and watching them do what we had done. But Hillary Clinton spent $27 million in Iowa. Edwards, we spent about $9 million in Iowa. We got halfway to our goal. We beat her, and we're only a few thousand votes behind Obama. He got 38% of the vote. We got 32. So for want of those votes, you know, our strategy would have worked, or at least we would have been in it. The problem there, and also is obviously things I didn't know, but, you know, Edwards had some problems, some personal problems that would come out later on. So in the end, it was probably the best thing that Barack Obama won Iowa and went on to win the nomination.
I've no doubt that the last of the David's battle will go on and there may be these sort of battles. But what I'm fascinated by is a young man said to me just coming in, who's still taking
over,
I think, reads much on the printed page, is that when it came time to record your story, you did it in the printed page.
Mm-hmm.
I had an answer for that, but I'd like to hear your answer for it. I mean, is it because authors really only get paid by printed companies, not by internet companies? Or is it something else?
Well, I mean, it's kind of, it's a mixture. I mean, what I would say is the same thing I've said earlier, is that you know, television still exists. You're not going to beat television by saying we're not going to play there, let the other candidate just beat me to death and I'll send emails out to people. That's not going to work. I have a blog, JoeTrippi.com. I have a Twitter. People can follow me at, you know, Twitter.com, JoeTrippi. So I Twitter, I blog. Twitter is text messaging. A lot of the content of the book is on my website or I have blogged about it. But again, there are a lot of people who will not ever go online still today. I mean, there are a lot of people who will never experience the internet because, I mean, either, you know, I can't deal with that thing, whatever that is. And so they're going to read a book. That's the important thing about campaigning, about a company, is that we're all doing the same thing. If you're only writing books and not blogging or talking, I mean, as a company or as a party, you're missing people. And there's a whole bunch of people under 40 who will never read a book. I mean, they may get a Kindle and download it. I'm talking about, but reading it with paper. I've got a Kindle. I think it's the greatest thing. My wife gave it to me for the holidays, but I love it.
What is it?
It's a Kindle. Is an electronic book. It downloads all the pages of the book, and you push a button, and the next page comes. It's on a computer-like screen, but it is the book. I mean, it's the book, but it's page by page, but it's an electronic device. What I mean is, there's all these different And by the way, when you do it, you don't kill a tree. In other words, you don't have to chop down a zillion trees to do Kindle. So there's all these different forms that are out there. All I'm saying is, very good question, but I think it's, you've got to do all of it. And then, yeah, the one thing which is true, I found it, I make television commercials for my political candidates, and it's very easy for me to get a candidate to pay me to make a television commercial for him. It's almost possible for me to get him to pay me for writing a good email that gets lots of people to sign up. And the same thing is true about the way a publisher will pay you for a book and then not allow you to put the book online because they're fearful of losing money. So all those different factors are involved in it.
Question on the back then? Yeah. Yep. Joe, thanks very much for your talk. $500 million, I think, was a figure you said.
Yes.
Which is a lot of money.
Yes.
That's a lot of mosquito nets, do you know, right?
Yes. Yes.
Do you think that there's ever going to be a point where the spending in real terms decreases from the previous election because the social media is used not to raise funds and effectively, and ironically, I guess, the David's lying in the pockets of the Goliath through 30-minute television ads and those
right.
sort of things, but that low-cost, democratized media will be used exclusively for distributing the message rather than raising funds through distributing the message?
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is that, again, YouTube just came online. I mean, there wasn't really a way to create social media that millions of people could watch prior to YouTube. I mean, and so, you know, the Will I Am video that was created for Barack Obama couldn't have happened in 2000. Millions of people watched that. There's no way it could have happened for Howard Dean. There's no way. We only had one way to reach people. I mean, we could only get 190,000 people to watch our broadband, because again, back then, most people in the States didn't have broadband. That's a big thing that changed. So you're seeing this evolution, and I think you're right, that as you get to saturation where every single person in in a country has broadband, and people have used YouTube and know, you know, where to go seek their information and will get it that way, it's going to have social media and viral media is going to have a much bigger impact, and you will see the costs go down. I mean, I personally find it bizarre that in a world where, I don't know, half to two-thirds of the world lives on less than $2 a day, we are downloading on our iPhone app something that makes our iPhone fart for 99 cents. It just blows me away that happens. I mean, it's something like not like, you know, what is wrong with that picture? The same thing happens in politics, but I think, like I said, is it going to happen? Can I guarantee it's going to happen? No, I can't do that. Can I say to you that it's the only hope I think we've got? Yeah, I really believe it's the only hope we've got at getting, you know, to a politics in which people are more involved, that's more meaningful, and that money doesn't run it.
I just had a question about passive versus active engagement.
Sure.
Like Robert Putnam and others have been writing for years.
Bowling alone, yeah.
Exactly, yes. Bowling alone, decline of engagement in sort of traditional political institutions, decline of party membership, decline in things like voting clubs, et cetera. And one response to that has been that things like sort of on in the U.S. and Get Up Here are probably replacing the social networking, MySpace, things like that, and also the political engagement. But is this a more passive form of engagement? Of those 13 million Obama people, how many signed up and kind of just ignored emails? Your experience, a lot of people who signed up for the Dean, did they end up being volunteers? Were they maybe more passive?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think you're right. What's happened is because there's been such a loss of community, as Putnam points out in Bowling Alone, it's one of the reasons I think people seek community online. I mean, it's one reason, whether it's Get Up or Move On or a knitting community at a meetup. You know, I mean, one of the big meetup.com was formed in retaliation to Putnam's theory. I mean, what they said was, okay, if people are going to bowl alone because they don't have friends to go bowling with, or they don't have time, what we're going to do is create meetup.com where you say, I like to bowl, let's have a meeting, and let's all get together and go do that. So all these other forces like meetup.com, hundreds of thousands of people are meeting. Yeah, I'm talking outside of politics. The biggest growth group in the United States of meetup.com are single moms who get together every month. And I'll watch your kids on Thursday if you'll watch mine on Wednesday, form a community of helping each other. So I don't think experience, again, getting your question about active versus passive, in our experience, literally nearly half of the 650,000 people with Dean gave money. And 190,000 of those people were meeting up in a meetup once a month for him. We had 650,000 people. A third are meeting up. Nearly half contribute. Now, certainly, you're right. There were some people in that 650,000 who did nothing but sign up and never opened another email. You know that. But the, you know, for that many people to get engaged in a more participatory way, and in the Obama campaign, that level seemed to sort of carry on. In other words, there was a huge number who contributed to him, a huge number who kept, I think 5 million of them actually organized for him out of the 13 million. Now, that's not 100%, but, I mean, you know, there haven't been 5 million people in America who have organized for all the political candidates for the last 20 years combined. I mean, it's a big difference to have that many people out there organizing. So, yes, I think get up, move on. You know, the people that are participating in meetups and the Obama campaign, I think, show that there's, yes, the first step is just an email. It's easy to sign up for that. But they're also then, a lot of them are doing the hard work or actually going in for more. And I think, you know, hopefully they'll help Obama govern.
Right down the back, yeah.
Do you have a view on intellectual bleach desaturation? Because there are risks, like at the moment, every company is now going to send a newsletter, an email, have a website, have a blog. Do you have a view that it will actually potentially get to a relation point? It's almost like the theory is now of rationality. There's just so much political blogs, there's so much information. Do you have a view on that?
Well, I mean, two things. First of all, the people that are on the list are getting killed, right? I mean, if you signed up for something that said you were one of these people who likes to get involved, you know, social networks, every company that you, once they, you know, once you're on one list, whether it's the 13 out of the 300 million in the States, there are 13 million people who feel like they're getting hammered right now, right? There's still 287 million people who've never gotten an email from a politician. So I'm saying, so you're getting sort of, yes, that the people who are into it are getting clobbered. The people that haven't yet gotten into it are still, like, you know, the iceberg underneath the waterline. You don't see them, and they'll get engaged. I think going back differently, I think what's happened is, look, this isn't going to be pushing. You're not going to be able to tell, hey, come here, sign this, click this. It's got to be people finding you. You've got content they want. You know, if you have content, if you're a company or a party that's producing content that I want, I'm going to go get it. Whether it's on YouTube, or whether it's an email, I'll open it, I'll find it. If you're just out there putting out trash, no one's going to open it up, and everybody will figure out it's trash. So there's going to be a premium on authenticity, on providing content that people really want to know and find information about. Just, you're not, selling is not going to work. Just out there saying, we're number one, here's another email, we're number one, join up, not going to work. It's got to be compelling. That's the big difference here. This sort of, the companies and entities that are used to, like, just running a cool ad and telling you, look, you've got to try us, that is not going to work. And so it's got to be the peer-to-peer thing that I talked about earlier. When a friend of yours says, well, you really got to look at this, you're going to go click on the link and you're really going to look at it. And either you're going to say, "What? Why did he waste my time?" Or you're going to say to some of your friends, "You really got to look at this." Well, it's the companies and the politicians who understand it's compelling content that matters to some of the people that they want to pass on and be the evangelist for the idea. Those are the people that are going to succeed. Obama, people wanted to pass on information from Obama to their friends. And if it's just, you know, the usual 20% off coupon, no one's going to, you know, or if the movie really does suck, you're not going to send emails on to your friends saying, "No, it's great." You're not going to lie to your friends about it. We are the new authenticators, each of us, about what's good, what's bad, what do our friends want to read, what they don't want to see. And that's to make that connection with your consumer, your voter, that's the importance.
You've got to be brave for running out of time.
And I'm long-winded. I know that, sorry.
When the printing press labelled Bibles to be translated into English and German, people were presented with something with a lot of very important ideas, really important. And in the 20th century in Germany in the 30s, the party that handled the media best and made great use of the radio was the Nazi party. And you look at the effect of that. Mm-hmm. You could say the effect of the Reformation in Europe was very positive, but the effect of the Nazi party,
right,
very negative. Now, when I meet young people...
Okay.
We
don't have a lot of
one more bit of it.
Yeah.
Who watch Facebook, and they're only young, and I don't watch Facebook. I try and get my info from the newspaper and here.
Right.
I asked them about Iraq. They say, "No, it's very positive. They're right against the war in Iraq. Can't give you three sentences on Iraq. Where are you going
Hillary,
to get the
stop.
Great ideas?"
Okay. Well, before you answer, that's one of the great sites of Australia.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I would say. Look, like this is a really simple thing to answer. Like every single medium that's come before it, the internet or the new media does not know who's using it. It is a tool. Radio is a propaganda tool. TV is a propaganda. Same thing. Okay, so it doesn't know who uses it. It could be used for good. It could be used for evil. And it's incumbent on us to not say, "Well, we're not going to use it. Just let the evil folks go cook up whatever they're going to cook," which is what happened in a lot of ways with radio, with the Nazis. It's up to us to figure out how to do good with it. Because if we don't, there'll be plenty of people out there trying to figure out how to do bad with it. And so, you know, I think that's the only answer to that question. Certainly, yes, a demagogue could use this in a way to motivate millions of people to do, to do things that we would just abhor. But it's up to the rest of us.
He does.
Yes.
Final question here. Yeah.
Joe, I just wanted to delve down the level. All the mass communications, texting and things like that, what was it primarily used to communicate? Was it sort of political parties, policy issues, please donate? What was it primarily used for?
All of that. I mean, it was everywhere and everything. I mean, the thing is to understand it's across every platform. It can't just be, it's laptop, it's cell phone, it's people who are interested in the Middle East, a community on My Barack that just talks about the Middle East, people who are interested in energy, people who just wake up every day wanting to knock on more doors for Barack Obama. How do we, and they have their own little community. That's what it is. It's about meeting people where they are. What's your town? I mean, in the Dean campaign, we literally said, "We don't like our logo. Like, can somebody out there with graphic arts interest or arts design a new logo? Because this thing, it's horrible," right? And people who had that talent started making signs, you know, and we started, I think the one we went for a month was some sign that a 9-year-old did with crayons because it was so real, so authentic, and it was so different from all the PR garbage that usually gets put up in signs. So it's letting people use their talents, use their interests, empower them to help you. I know how to do signs. I do graphic design. Great. Help us do that. Help us do it better than we're doing it. I like organizing. Great. Help us do that. And yes, if you're people who are very interested in policy had a community that they could help build and get other people who are interested in that policy to have those discussions. And when they didn't agree, when Barack Obama voted for the FISA bill, that created a huge uprising on his own site where thousands of people in protest created we're not going to be with you if you keep doing this. He just stepped in and started having a conversation with them. He just said, I know you don't agree with me, let me explain why and how. And it was one of the first times anybody can remember there was an actual dialogue on an issue directly on the, they were having it right there. Everybody could watch it and see it. And it was like, well, this really is different. This really is a new way of doing things. And it empowered that conversation. So we're seeing it was more involving everybody in any way that they wanted to be involved.
Joe, many thanks. Take your seat.
Thank you.
Apologies for the interruption, but I thought our speaker might like to see that ship sailing out of Sydney Harbour, which is great. So, Joe Trippi's paper in Time will be published in the Sydney papers, but the talk tomorrow will be up on our podcast. Once again, thanks to Microsoft. I guess most Democratic or Republican candidates who don't make it through the primaries are soon forgotten, but Howard Dean won't be, not so much because of Mr. Dean, but because of the Dean campaign, in which Joe Trippi played a very important role. So we've been very privileged tonight to have such an important player in, I guess, the politics of the 21st century, and the implications will go well beyond the first decade of this century. So it's been our privilege tonight to have you here, and I hope sometime in the future we'll see you back again, by which time many things may have changed. But for tonight, thank you very much.
You have been listening to the Sydney Institute podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you through the support of Microsoft Australia. We hope you enjoyed listening and can join us again soon.